back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm cutting to the chase as they cut on my spine over the week. I'm getting back into gear. I think I might be on the DL Sunday. I still have a seat next to Luke Jones. Luke joins us now on behalf of our friends at The Real Farms, real fresh, real fast with the tasty chicken. And don't forget those Western fries. And dude, it's been a harrowing for me. I just want to apologize to all the listeners out there. I don't have any of my Cincinnati usuals because I couldn't stand, I couldn't sit, I couldn't lay. But maybe I'll get Dave Lapham and some of my pals on next week. And certainly we'll see Cincinnati again later on in the year. But Luke, big game, 5-1. I've talked all week about where this would be on the expectation level for the kind of injuries they had at the first week of September and where they were supposed to be and where they are. This is kind of heady stuff where they are. When you look at the schedule, you look at winnable football games, you look at them starting to get better, starting to get healthier. Certainly the offense has got better. The defense got better this week. There's a lot of optimism right now around the football team. And it's not often in the middle of October I start talking about number one overall in the AFC, but that should be the goal right now for this organization.
Yeah, I mean, why not? You see what Kansas City's gone through early in the season. You see in this very division what the Cleveland Browns are going through. As much as we were talking about injuries for the Ravens 6 weeks ago, a month ago, now it's the Browns. And you see what they're going through. And if they're going to hold on to try to be at least relevant in the AFC North, let's say. But
they have no pedigree for it the way around here, where like we lose a guy, Harbaugh had 14 years of figuring that out, right? Literally there, when things go off the rail there, they, you know what I mean? They could really, it's Cleveland. I mean, you know what I mean? Like I don't, there's no history there for them to weather the storm of all of this.
Yeah. And that's most teams, quite frankly. I mean, that's as much as we talk about it all the time. Next man up sounds great. And you get to a certain breaking point. It's a t-shirt slogan, but the Ravens, to their credit, and it's not as though going into the season, even with the injuries that they had, I mean, I still pick this team to win the division. I picked them to go 12-5. We'll see what that ultimately looks like at the end of the year. As I said, even when the schedule came out, late November through the end of the regular season is really when the schedule becomes a bit of a bear. And that's still on track, even if you're looking at Pittsburgh right now, not nearly as imposing as they've been historically. And who knows where the Browns will be at that point. But you know, I said all along, you look at this early season schedule, I think there was a great opportunity there. We knew week two, Kansas City was going to be tough. Win or lose, that was going to be a tough game. But you looked at the rest of those early games, and the Chargers, Indianapolis, those were the two games, I think, going into the season, you're kind of saying, okay, depending on how those teams are doing, depending on how healthy those teams are, it's going to be challenging. But my overall point is, I'm not shocked in how and the fact that they're 5-1 right now. Maybe how it looked in week one, and you lose the opener, and you see Ronnie Stanley's back on the shelf, and you know we'll get to him in a few moments, I'm sure. But you know, at that point, you're thinking 0-2 because you're playing Kansas City, and you're worried about it spiraling. But once they got through the Chiefs and they beat the Chiefs, at this point moving forward, I'm not shocked by what's happened. I'm shocked that they beat the Chargers as convincingly as they did, and that really speaks to what you were just mentioning in terms of the conversation changing from not just winning the division, but hey, beat out Buffalo, beat out Kansas City, beat out whoever else for the number one seed and get that one first round bye that's there right now. But on the flip side, and that's where we bring it to who's coming to town on Sunday to take the Ravens, the Cincinnati Bengals. You look at this team, and let's be very clear. Their schedule so far, home against Minnesota, at Chicago, at Pittsburgh, home against Jacksonville, home against Green Bay, at Detroit. Not exactly a bear of a schedule early on. I think we all would look at that. And in some ways, it reminds me a little bit of how we previewed that Denver Broncos matchup in week four and how that ultimately turned out.
Well, you but wonder where their second loss is coming from and how you would feel if their second loss is home to Cincinnati, home to Minnesota, or even at Miami. They should be sitting there by the time they're going to Chicago looking at, you know, at 8-9-1, right? I mean, that's where you want them to be, and you know they're capable of that now. I think the Chargers game, I don't want to compare it to the Seahawks game a couple of years ago, but I think it's in that direction of saying that's a statement game and the way they played it, different going out to Seattle. That was a whole different thing for Lamar a couple of years ago, but I think it's put them back on, especially for the defense, back on alert that, you know, if you got to come to Baltimore and win in January, it's not going to go well for you.
No, I think you're right. But the point I was getting ready to make, though, you start looking at the Cincinnati Bengals team, they're a little bit better. I mean, they're certainly better than I thought they were going to be. And I was even someone saying, okay, this is a team, young quarterback, really good skilled players. They've revamped their defense a whole lot. Yeah, they're a team that when the Ravens go to Cincinnati the day after Christmas, they might be a lot better than they are in September and October. And maybe that's a little bit accelerated. I mean, I certainly expect the Ravens to win this game on Sunday, but when you really start looking at this team, their defense is much better than it's been the last couple of years. I mean, the last couple of years, it's been the rotting corpse of the Marvin Lewis era on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, Carlos Dunlap not being the guy he used to be. Geno Atkins hurt. Those guys are gone. And this is a revamped defense that looks better. And
does it mean Domata Peko wouldn't come back next month?
sure. But you do look at this team though, and you see Trey Hendrickson doing good things for them, and you see DJ Reader really being that run stopping nose tackle that they signed a couple years ago, where he's healthy and playing well. So they've been better there. Their linebackers have been better. Now, does that equate to shutting down the Ravens' running game and handling Lamar Jackson if they're running option on the edge and all that? That remains to be seen. That's where I said you do have to look at the quality of opponents or lack thereof that the Bengals have played to this point. But you know, you see a defense that's better. Offensively, it's funny that the sum of the parts has still been kind of inconsistent. You look at Joe Burrow and his potential, and you see him at his best. My goodness, Ja'Marr Chase, for all the talk of the Bengals not taking an offensive tackle, and maybe in the long run, that still proves to be unwise for them. But Ja'Marr Chase has been fantastic. I mean, this is not a guy who's playing well for a rookie. He's been one of the best wide receivers in football so far. And he's going to be a matchup nightmare for the Ravens in the sense of, do you just have Marlon Humphrey travel with him? Oh, yeah, you still have T. Higgins. You still have Tyler Boyd. You still have Joe Mixon out of the backfield. C.J. Uzomah, who is not a great tight end by any means, but he's the kind of guy that could give you trouble if you're not devoting enough attention to him and you're solely focused on these wide receivers. So they have a lot of weapons, is my point. The offensive line, still a weakness. I think it's better than it's been the last couple of years, but that's still going to be the key here. Joe Burrow has been pretty good when he's been blitzed, hasn't been blitzed a whole lot, but I still think that's going to be the key, in the same way that we saw the Ravens do this against Justin Herbert on Sunday, to rattle a young quarterback and to not allow him to be too comfortable back there. And it doesn't just mean blitzes. Sometimes it's going to be simulated pressures where you're going to have seven or eight guys up front and only four will rush, but you don't know which four. And then everyone else will drop into coverage. I think they're going to try to confuse quite a bit. So I still like the Ravens, but I think this is a matchup, as I've looked at it more and more over the course of the week, you know, I'm impressed with what the Bengals are doing. And that doesn't mean I think that they're going to be there in late December battling it out with the Ravens for the division title, but with a 7-team field now in the playoffs, if you're going to tell me right now that the Bengals are battling it out for the number 7 seed with, you know, take your pick of whichever teams are there, kind of in that, you know, in the AFC hierarchy, that wouldn't stun me. You know, I could see this team hovering around 500, a little bit higher than that, and being in the wild card chase. But, you know, as it relates to the Ravens right now, going back to what you said, coming off of the Chargers win, winning in such convincing fashion, for me, this is where you want to see the Ravens build upon that. And that doesn't mean they have to win by 28 points, but it does mean take care of your business at home. You're going into the bye week. You know, Ronnie Stanley news aside, you're hoping you're getting slowly but surely healthier. And you're, you know, Nick Boyle's practicing this week and you hope to see him after the bye. We'll see about Derek Wolf. Go down the list of guys that, you know, you think have a chance to come back, but you want to go into this bye week on a high note, and to be 6-1 going into the bye with everything they've dealt with from a health standpoint and the challenges there. Boy, you're really feeling great about that. And I mean, the Bengals are 4-2, and you lose this game, you allow Cincinnati to come in and beat you in your home stadium. It's a tie for first place, and they have the tiebreaker for the time being. So kind of becomes a little more of a sour bye week then. So
it'll be a rough
I think this is a great opportunity for the Ravens. No question. I mean, not to panic that the season's over or anything crazy like that, but I think you'll have some ticked off people because, you know, I think this Ravens team is absolutely better than the Bengals. But that said, this Ravens team was much better than the Detroit Lions. And we saw what happened there. The Ravens needed an NFL record field goal to win that game. You know how the league works. And it would be very NFL-like for the Ravens to do what they did against the Chargers, and then the following week, not saying Ravens-like, but NFL-like, for the Ravens to drop a game to the Bengals that you feel they shouldn't drop. I mean, look at the Titans. They just beat Buffalo on Monday night. And this is the same Titans team that lost to the Jets a few weeks ago. I mean, come on now. It just speaks to how crazy the league is. And let's face it, no one was expecting the Ravens to blow out the Chargers. And if you kind of look at how the first 5 weeks had gone and you eliminated that week six game and then tried to break down this matchup, you'd say, you know, there's a good chance that this is a really close football game and that the Bengals have a chance in the fourth quarter. So it'll be up to the Ravens to start fast and to really, you know, I would assume Cincinnati is going to be fired up. You know, I think they're probably tired of being embarrassed by the Ravens. And you know, we all remember the 400-yard rushing game at the end of the regular season last year. So this is a great chance for the Bengals to show that they're for real. Whereas the Ravens, you know, this is their chance to you know, make clear who the leading man is in the AFC North and to really seize control of this division. I mean, they're leading right now, but you really seize control here. And, you know, you have a couple game cushion then going into your bye week.
Luke, you mentioned the pressure on Burrow and where that's going to come from and who's going to be a part of that. It was amazing in the postgame press conference that Herbert talked about nothing he studied happened during the game. When that happens, it makes it even more complex for Joe Burrow to be looking at the game plan this week when they've installed all sorts of weird little things last week. And with the way Wink does the stunts and the blitzes and, you know, everybody's moving around. I mean, it's very reminiscent of Rex Ryan when these guys get to know each other a little better, and especially when they can stop the run up front and force you into these third and tens, third and 12s. That's when you pin your ears back, especially at home with the noise, all of that. They've made a tough week of work for Joe Burrow this week based on what I heard from Herbert last week.
Yeah, I think that's the case with any young quarterback. I mean, maybe anyone not named Patrick Mahomes, although you'd say in week two, the Ravens did a good job against Patrick Mahomes. So,
by the way, I want to say this. The Chiefs are practicing tackling this week. I read this on the internet in preparation for Derrick Henry. So, you know, practicing tackling in October is what the defending AFC champs are doing.
Well, let's face it. The Ravens had been practicing tackling quite a bit. In fact, leading up to the Chargers game, the two previous weeks, I guess before the Colts game, I should say, because the Monday night game, they had the extra day. They were practicing in full pads and working on their tackling because we knew that was an issue for them. But I think with Joe Burrow, the difference here is for him potentially is he's seen this once, right? I mean, the same way we've talked about teams that have seen Lamar Jackson in this Ravens offense doesn't mean you're going to stop it. Doesn't mean that you're even going to be successful against it or contain it, but it is logical. You know, you don't have to be a genius to kind of think about, okay, if you've seen this before, doesn't mean you're going to get the same exact looks, but you at least know a little bit what the tempo is going to look like, what it's going to look like, you know, aesthetically, you know, how to prepare for it. Whereas, you know, Justin Herbert, we've never seen the Ravens before. So that's where it will be interesting. Not to say that Joe Burrow is going to be successful on Sunday, but he did see that early last year before the knee injury. Of course, he wasn't available at the end of the season when these teams met in Cincinnati, but that's where it is interesting, but it is such a challenge. You know, we've spent so much time over these last few years in the Lamar Jackson era talking about how crazy it is to prepare for this offense because it is so different in the way that we've said that it's like college teams preparing for Navy or for Air Force or you know, I don't even say a novelty offense because that sounds disrespectful, but it is different. You know, you don't see other teams play the way that the Ravens do, and that's a compliment to them. But I think some of that same that idea also applies to this defense because of how multiple, how deceptive, how aggressive Wink Martindale likes to be with this defense. And we focus so much on the blitzing, and yes, at the end of the season, you expect the Ravens to be right at the top in terms of blitz rate. But we also know that there are times where, like they did with Kansas City in week two, they might show some different fronts, but they aren't necessarily blitzing. Or it might be they rush three and then someone comes off of looking like they're going to cover and they're a delayed fourth rusher. I mean, they do so many different things to just try to trick you. It isn't just about making you uncomfortable with blitzing. It's about making a quarterback see something that isn't there, or you know, something pops up and he's saying, oh, oh, you know what? I mean, I wasn't ready for that. So that's where I think it is interesting. And I mean, Joe Burrow's got weapons. These receivers are talented. And I think Ja'Marr Chase is going to be a challenge, whether it's Marlon Humphrey traveling with him or whether it's Anthony Averett trying to slow him on the outside. I mean, that's going to be a big time challenge. So if you're the Ravens defense, you want to avoid too many of those one-on-one situations where Joe Burrow is getting a chance, you know, where he has enough time to throw and can push it down the field, because they will do that. I mean, Chase is a big play wide receiver already, and they've hit on big plays. So that's, you know, those are the types of plays you want to try to avoid in this football game. I mean, you know, the path to a defeat is what? You know, your offense turns it over a couple times, and Cincinnati gets a couple big plays. You know, steal some points. Big plays
when Mixon breaks the tackle. That's going to be a big play for them, right?
No question. And that's where so much of the talk about the linebackers, and obviously so much discussion about Josh Bynes moving into the Mike spot, Patrick Queen playing the will and kind of rotating with Malik Harrison, and you know, that 2019 narrative all over again, right? But, and Martindale said this on Thursday, you know, he kind of compared it to, it's like that sandcastle you build at the beach every day. And, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's going to be washed away when the tide comes in. You know, it's a new week. And just because you saw the Ravens with improved tackling and improved linebacker play, and they didn't have Austin Ekeler catching passes out of the backfield against them in the same way that Jonathan Taylor did it for Indy or DeAndre Swift did it for Detroit, you know, you have to repeat that. You know, as much as we always want to kind of have recency bias comes into play, where you always look at what a team did last week and you say, okay, that's what this team is now. There's 5 weeks of evidence that says this defense is very up and down. So the challenge is, can you play more like you did against the Chargers? I'm not saying you're going to only give up 6 points every week. I mean, that's not realistic unless you're the 2000 Ravens, but can you play more consistently? Did you untap, you know, did you tap into some answers there? And part of that being Josh Bynes. And I think the other part, we mentioned this in our post game discussion, but Deshaun Elliott being back as well and how they deploy him. I mean, safety, sometimes he drops into the box. He likes to blitz, and we saw him sack Herbert on Sunday. So Wink loves to have those, you know, he compares it to the modern day NBA, where it's really positionless defense, where you have guys that can do different things, and you're blitzing defensive backs, and you're having defensive linemen who will drop into coverage on occasion. And you want guys to be multiple. And that's really what it comes down to. When this defense is at its best, one, you have to be healthy. And we know, okay, Marcus Peters isn't coming back, and Derek Wolfe's not going to be out there on Sunday. But in terms of the players that are available right now, they seem to be pretty healthy. And getting Elliott back was big for Sunday's game. Will be big again on Sunday, having him on the field. But it really is a matter of, now that you've done what you did against the Chargers, the standard is elevated then, right? No, I mean, you played a complete four quarters of football against an offense that was pretty darn good going into week six. So that'll be the challenge, to duplicate that while also understanding that, you know, the game plan changes and the opponent changes, and success. And this, you know, this ties in with all the crazy, silly Lamar Jackson being figured out offseason discussion. Success is a moving target. I mean, it always is. I mean, you think you have something figured out, and we talk about this in baseball all the time with adjustments, pitcher batter adjustments, right? You know, that pitcher who does great the first 2 months he's a rookie, and then, you know, there's tape on him, and there's scouting reports on him. Same with hitters. You know, that applies in football, and you're going to see different things. And just like the Bengals with their improved defense are going to throw some different things at Lamar Jackson than they attempted to do over the last couple years. Now, not saying I like their chances for it working necessarily, but it just really speaks to, you can't rest on what you did the previous week. It really is, this is going to be an interesting data point, I think, for both of these teams, especially for Cincinnati trying to show maybe they're for real in terms of at least being a wild card contender, let's say. And for the Ravens, it's another chance to say, hey, week six wasn't just a fluke and wasn't just about the Chargers waking up, you know, being on West Coast time and unprepared and lethargic. It's a chance to say, that's who we are. And which was very 2019 like, if we're being very honest about it. So it is a great opportunity, but it's one of those 17 data points. And you know, what happened last week isn't terribly relevant when you get to Sunday and an AFC North divisional opponent coming in, which also kind of strange, you know, how we're entering the latter days of October, and this is your first division game, but a great opportunity for the Ravens to go on the bye week, feeling really good about themselves if they can get a 6th straight win.
And I said this ad on social media earlier. By the way, Luke Jones joining us here. All brought to you by our friends at Wise Mark. It's another Wise conversation. I had a great conversation this week about ice cream and Halloween ice cream and pumpkin ice cream with Hannah Grotti. So, Luke, I guess last thing here is Ronnie Stanley. I tweeted on social media that I don't think John Harbaugh, Eric DaCosta, any of them are really shocked at the direction this went in after week two or three. The last month, I think they've been hanging on, never really believing he's going to be back in November, December at full strength for a postseason rush. And it's disappointing. I mean, like everything else, we'll sit here and talk about injuries all day. We've been talking about that injury for a year now. And it like Harbaugh said, it just didn't work out. And that's the way this is going to go at this point. Then there's the Orlando Brown argument. Dennis and I chatted about that on his show earlier this week at Coons Ford. You can listen from 3 until 5 on Thursday. It'll be on again Sunday morning. So if you want to hear that conversation, you'll hear it before the game. Just about what the level of expectation is for Orlando Brown, Villanueva, Ronnie Stanley, Patrick McCary. You know, all their best laid plans have gone to hell, and now they're trying to piece it all back together. And sitting in the middle of that is when you use a first-round draft pick on a left tackle, he works out, you give him $100 million, and then he can't get back on the field.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, I think what's interesting for me is, I mean, the Ravens have been so hush-hush about details. I mean, even going back to when he was injured, you never really heard a formal diagnosis. Okay, you know, he tore this ligament, that ligament, fracture, dislocation, whatever it all was. I mean, they were very hush-hush about that. And even Stanley and his representation have been hush-hush because, you didn't hear an Ian Rappaport, a report what the details were. So I guess my biggest question would be,
what are you hiding?
Well, it's not even so
I'm
much
a journalist,
that,
though. Sorry,
I mean, certainly, I mean, that's fair. I'm not saying I disagree with that. But for me, I guess my thought was, what was your level of information and your confidence level when you decided to trade Orlando Brown Jr.? And for me, if this were a case where the Ravens were told by doctors at the time of the injury and the first surgery, because keep in mind, John Harbaugh said in March that he'd had 2 surgeries at that point. Now, we know he's had at least 3 now. So did he have another cleanup at some point between March and when he got back on the field in August? We don't know. But I guess my question is, were they told by doctors, were they told by the training staff that no problem, he's going to make a full recovery, no problems whatsoever. It's a bad injury, but it's, in the same way that you think of an ACL as a bad injury, in that there's a really high return rate in this day and age compared to that happening in 1993. Or was there a little more question or a little more unknown with this? And then if that's the case, all right, were you a little too optimistic, a little too ambitious thinking about the future trading Orlando Brown? And okay, keep in mind, they did get Odafe Oweh with the pick that they got there. Although they traded their 2nd round pick. So it wasn't just Brown for a 1st round pick. So it was a little more complicated than that. But I guess with all of this,
well, the complicated part was giving Brown the money too. Let's not forget that.
Like, sure. Well,
if you kept him around, you're going to get a sandwich pick 3 years from now.
Well, and that's the big issue here. And this is where it just comes down to rotten luck. And this is where, in some ways, it feels a little Dennis Pitta-esque in the sense of, I think we have to ask ourselves a question now. And John Harbaugh acknowledged as much when he was asked on Wednesday, without getting into any specifics, because I believe John in that he isn't well versed in every single medical detail. He wants to know if Stanley can play or not. And if the doctors say no, John's on to the next guy because he's thinking about football. But from an organizational standpoint, this is where you do wonder, all right, the guy's had at least 3 surgeries. We're coming up on a year since the injury. Is he going to come back? One, is he going to come back to play? 2, is he going to be anywhere close to the guy he was pre-injury? Or is this a Dennis Pitta, Tony Boselli? If you want to use a left tackle analogy there, and we all remember how great he was for Jacksonville before the shoulder just completely.
Look, Andrew Luck, we can go through all of these guys that have been injured, right?
I mean, but this is where it's
real. I mean, coming from a guy who had 2 needles in his spine yesterday, it's real, dude. It's real.
But this is where
I can't walk to the football game Sunday, let alone play in it, literally, right?
But this is where it's so, where you just look at it from a rotten luck standpoint, in the sense that, all right, we know Ronnie Stanley had missed some games here and there. He had a foot injury his rookie year, missed 4 games there. He's had a couple concussions. You know, I think he missed the game with a shoulder injury. In fact, the Washington game earlier in the season last year, which is when Orlando Brown played left tackle for the Ravens for the first time, interestingly enough. But no one could have foreseen this kind of catastrophic injury 2 days after the guy signs a $98.75 million contract extension. So that part of it's rotten luck. But the reality is, I think it was a little over $70 million guaranteed. His salary next year is guaranteed. You look at this from a cap standpoint, and all right, maybe Ronnie Stanley will be one of those guys and say, hey, I'll take a pay cut and I'll do this or I'll do that. But he's not, he doesn't have to, right? I mean, you sign long-term deals because this can potentially happen as a football player. And that's why we know this sport so much more important than the other sports, knowing that the high risk of a long-term debilitating injury that exists compared to baseball, for example, where you don't see too many of those in this day and age. But it really does put them in a tough spot, because to me, looking at the breakdown of the contract, yeah, the earliest you could talk about even thinking about moving on is 2023, and really more so 2024. So it's really bad luck. You hope for the best. You hope for the fact that he elected to do this now, as opposed to continue to try to rehab and, you know, kind of spinning your wheels. And then he doesn't have surgery until December. Gives him a couple extra months and a full off season. You're hoping he comes back. But so there's that. But then there's also the finality of it for 2021 and saying, all right, Patrick McCary's played really well at right tackle, but he does have a history of some back issues. And you know, that's one thing I know the Ravens had some trepidation about making him a full-time starter, even with the thought that he has a little bit of a cranky back. So there's that. And then Alejandro Villanueva's 33. He's filled in admirably and has been good enough for the most part over the 5 weeks that he's played left tackle. But what does that look like getting into November and December and January? We know he's been dealing with a sore knee. You don't really, if one of those two guys go down, all right, you have Tyree Phillips. I don't know. He's a second year guy.
Which are you where the Chiefs were at the Super Bowl last year, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's, and this is where we keep coming back to. As much, the Ravens have done a phenomenal job overcoming their injuries. There's no question about that. I mean, I'm Captain Obvious saying that, right? I mean, when you look at the guys that they've lost, but as I've said, with each of those injuries, your margin for error just grows smaller and smaller and smaller. And you still have all of November and all of December. And even now you play two games in January before you even get to the playoffs. So it's a matter of fingers crossed, holding your breath over that period of time, that what you have on the field right now will stay on the field moving forward, because that's where you get into, you know, of course they miss Ronnie Stanley and the upside that he brings, and the guy, when he's at his best, arguably the best left tackle in football. That's why they paid him the way they did. So I know fans want to do the thing or next man up and, you know, they'll be fine. Well, they hopefully, I think they can be fine, but you're still asking a lot in terms of staying healthy moving forward now and not having too many more injuries, and hoping that Villanueva holds up at age 33, and hoping that Patrick McCary's back stays healthy and he continues to be a godsend at right tackle, because I don't think the Ravens had any thought that he'd be as good as he's been. I mean, he's really been the surprise. Villanueva, you know, he's been up and down, but solid for the most part, right? McCary's been pretty darn good. I mean, I would not have expected him to be as good as he's been, but he didn't even practice at right tackle. He practiced everywhere else during training camp, but right tackle. So it just shows how crazy this game can be. But again, there was always that thought, that hope at least, that maybe you get a healthy Stanley by Thanksgiving. Maybe he's healthy by December, and you know that that's not happening now. So it just means you've got to keep these guys on the field, and you just hope for the best. And you know, the war of attrition can get you at any time. And we hope that the Ravens have gone through the worst in that regard. And you would hope so. You would think so. But you saw how the injuries just creeped up on Cleveland, in a matter of a couple of weeks, and no Nick Chubb, no Kareem Hunt, no JOK at linebacker, Baker Mayfield's hurt. I mean, it can happen very quickly. And we saw that with the Ravens in the summer. So that's going to be the challenge here. And in the big picture, you hope that this latest surgery for Stanley and a long rehab process until training camp next year, you hope he can be the guy that he was, because – You know, the Ravens gave him his money, and good for him, by the way, to get paid. And maybe something Lamar Jackson should be paying attention to if we're looking at it from a business standpoint. But you know, you're hoping, as it relates to the Ravens in 2021, that these guys that have been filling in and they've done a nice job, but needing that to continue a few more months, that's going to be the challenge in terms of health and performance.
He is Luke Jones. He is a Baltimore Luke out on Twitter and Facebook and anywhere the social media things travel. I am doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I've been on the shelf here the last 2 weeks. I promise we're going to get out to Nick's Grandstand Grill. We're going to do that on November the 5th now. We're going to be at Silver Spring Mining next week, and I'm setting that up for a Halloween weekend. We also have the mayor, Brandon Scott, joining us on the 17th of November. That's a Wednesday before the Bears game. We'll be doing that at Coco's over in Lauraville. The Maryland Lottery presents the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Let yourself play. We'll be playing the minute I get the ice on my back. Enjoy the game on Sunday, Luke. You and I will be tweeting and texting and doing all of those things and doing some post-game in the aftermath. And in the meantime, keep enjoying all we're doing here at WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, where we never stop talking Baltimore positive.